Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Halloween. It's Thursday, October 31st. Currently 27 degrees in Old Town Park City. We're reporting 28 degrees in the Heber Valley. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Nate Larson. Good morning, Nate.
Hey, good morning, Leslie. Happy Halloween, everybody. We've got a pretty nice forecast overall. We do have some clouds in store for your Halloween. Even a stray shower is possible. Highs near 44. There's a weak front just clipping northern Utah. We're expecting a few sprinkles just north of I-80 across much of northern Utah into our mountain areas. So don't be surprised if you see a few snowflakes. Little to no snow accumulations expected, though, even for the Wasatch back, especially with highs in the mid-40s. Might be a bit of a wintry mix, but I don't think you really need the umbrellas or anything throughout the evening. If you're heading out and about, a lot of the moisture should be out of here by early afternoon. Overnight lows near 23 in Park City, highs near 47 on Friday. Should be a nice day tomorrow with partly cloudy skies. We'll see increasing moisture, though, into Saturday. We have another front that's working towards us. It will bring rain showers late Saturday over to snow showers on Sunday. Temperatures falling to just 35 degrees for the high on Sunday. Should see a couple of inches of snow accumulate over the weekend with a chance of moisture lingering into next week. In fact, another system lined up Tuesday into Wednesday. So temperatures are going to stay in the mid to upper 30s in Park City through midweek with overnight lows in the low 20s, if not upper teens. And in Heber, looking at a high of 49 today, slight chance of a shower this afternoon, early afternoon, and then clearing out through the evening. Partly cloudy skies tomorrow. Overnight lows will be in the upper teens. Should see 53, though, for the high on Friday. 53 on Saturday with mostly cloudy skies. Showers late Saturday with rain and snow on Sunday. With that chance of moisture also lingering into next week with partly cloudy skies each day, temperatures in the mid to low 40s, overnight lows near 20 degrees, and we should see a better chance of showers, though, Tuesday into Wednesday with an actual storm pushing through.
Okay. Hey, thanks, Nate. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Summit County Council Chair Melina Stevens. We'll take a look at yesterday's meeting. President of Park City Senior Center Liz Novak will be joined by Board Member Francine McNally with an update on the Senior Center financial and updates. Other updates. Also, a partner with the DoubleTree Redevelopment and Park City resident Peter Tamai, discussing their plans now that the Park City Planning Commission has voted their plans down. Then stay tuned for Cool Science Radio. Today's guests include paleoanthropologist Donald Johansson, who found the 3.2-million-year-old iconic fossil Lucy some 50 years ago in the Ethiopian desert. Then, why is the Earth spinning slightly faster? Scientific American journalist Mark Fischetti talks about the Earth's rotation and how it's changing and how that relates to how global timekeepers actually accurately keep time. All of that coming up on Cool Science Radio. Right now on the phone with us with our trails report, I have the executive director of Mountain Trails Foundation, Laura Anthony. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie, and happy Halloween to all those ghostly trail lovers out there. We have got kind of a mixed match out there. Looks like the basin is reporting that their basin rec is reporting that the bike park is possibly closed for the season. Kind of depends on how much it dries out and with the forecast that we have on tap. It doesn't seem like we're going to be able to bring that back. So count the bike park out. Looks like single track. I was actually out there yesterday morning and it was really good. If you get out in the morning, it's frozen solid and there's not a lot of ice or like packed down snow that's turned to ice. It's quite lovely out there, especially in Round Valley. I would highly recommend going out in the morning or late in the evening when it's frozen up. That might be a little dicey depending on the aspect, but just use good judgment, be a good trail user and protect the trails. Looks like Wasatch Trails Foundation is reporting that lower down trails are still rideable in Wasatch County. Best to use before the thaw, and the snowmaking on the mountain has begun. So the resorts have trails on the mountain will be impacted by snowmaking, and also there are some hard closures. Trails like Jenny's Trail would be off limits. Some of the stuff that just kind of goes right up through the resort. You can probably still get out into the Sweeney's Switchback area. Sparrow is probably still good. Just be mindful of mountain operations. We are getting ready for our ski season. So have a great Halloween. Be safe out there and have a great day on the trails. We'll see you out there.
Okay. Thanks, Laura. Well, taking a look at some local news now, the Park City School District is moving forward with financial plans so it can break ground on new athletic facilities this spring. KPCW's Christine Muller reports lease revenue bonds will pay for three of the four phases.
The District Board of Education has considered various athletic facility plans over the last 7 months as it tries to balance sports needs. The board now plans to move forward with three phases, phases one, two, and four. In phase one, softball and baseball fields will be built near Treasure Mountain Junior High. Phase two will demolish Treasure Mountain after it's decommissioned at the end of the school year. In its place, soccer fields and tennis courts will be added. Phase four would revamp the Dozier football field with a new track and turf. The combined projects would cost around $36 million, and Vine says they would not require any more money from taxpayers.
There's a way to do lease revenue bonds, and we are currently allocating about $1.9 million out of capital every year for our construction projects. Well, those construction projects are wrapping up, so we're able to reallocate that funding to paying for the fields and turf.
Fine says the interest rate on the lease revenue bonds is very low, and considering the needs of students, it would be best to get them the facilities they need sooner rather than later. Phase three includes renovating the existing Park City High School gym and building a field house and parking. This phase would cost upwards of $90 million. The district is examining options to fund these additions, including a potential tax increase.
One of the reasons the board likes phases one, two, and four is they're able to move quickly on that while still offering the flexibility to the future to determine really how to best utilize that space and the funding. But there is a plan in place that allows the future board and the community to see how this could be phased out.
Fine says the field house and gym renovations are part of the master plan because they provide facilities close to students. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
The Summit County Council met yesterday with continued discussion on the Dakota Pacific public-private partnership and next year's budget. On the phone with a recap, I have Council Chair Melina Stevens. Good morning, Melina.
Good morning, Leslie.
So you held your last work session with Dakota Pacific ahead of next week's public hearing. So will a decision be made next week, or are you going to have more discussion on this still?
So no decision will be made next week during the public hearing. And just to clarify, this was our last work session prior to the public hearing. Dakota Pacific has, between the public-private partnership that was worked on with the county that has been discussed in public meetings since April, we want to understand where the public is on the current iteration of the project so that we can continue to have work sessions as far as where do we need to negotiate within this project. This is not finalized at this point. This is something that we want to make sure that as a council we get right, which includes input from the public so that we can make sure that we're not missing something as we go into the subsequent negotiations.
Well, as you just said, the plans aren't public, so why hold a public hearing? I mean, what do people comment on?
Well, the plans are public, so we've had over the last 2 months, we've had six meetings that have detailed the current plan that Dakota Pacific is proposing. So the plans are public.
No, I mean, they're not final, I guess is what I meant to say. They're not final.
Well, the purpose of a public hearing isn't to necessarily elicit feedback on the final product. It's to elicit feedback on the proposal. We've gotten it to a place where, you know, we feel that there's a lot of good pieces to this project as far as the public-private partnership in particular. And so we want to understand, is this something that the public is interested in? Are we going in a direction that feels good to the public? What does this look like? Again, what are we missing? So the purpose of a public hearing isn't necessarily here's the final iteration, let's make the decision. It's let's get the feedback from the public, and then we can ensure that we're moving forward in the correct direction.
And as you know, you've heard from members of the public who are surprised this development is back up for a public hearing and decision by the end of the year. If they haven't been paying attention, how can they catch up on these discussions?
So we are going to have, we asked Dakota Pacific yesterday within our public meeting to have their slide deck available, I believe, by this Friday when the packet goes out. So it will be in the packet. I believe we're also going to be posting it on our website in addition to social media so that people can review where the plan is now. If members of the public are interested in How did we get here? What were the council conversations? All of those are on our website. We can also publish those dates of the meetings so that people can go back through with the link to the website and either read those minutes if approved or listen to the audio recordings if they have interest in understanding how did this evolve, if they were not, you know, paying attention to your point or had other things going on in life, which is true for all of us at times.
Well, the Dakota Pacific application already went to the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission, and at one point, some 4 years ago, as a planning commission, you even recommended it. But the public-private partnership has not gone to planning commission. Do they need to look at it?
According to our legal, no, that's not something that the planning commission needs to review at this point. So this process will remain with the council.
All right. The public has not seen yet or had, or the planning commission, I should say, has not yet had a chance, though, to look at the public-private partnership, the portion of affordable housing that the county plans to build, nor the land swap.
So again, the public has not had the opportunity to comment on that yet because we have not yet a public hearing, which is scheduled for next Thursday, November 7th at 5:30 at the New Park Hotel. But again, those plans, We've been reviewing them weekly for the last about 6 weeks, in addition to having public meetings about monthly prior to that. So there have been opportunities for the public to engage with this process. Some members of the public have received some public comment at this point, but again, it's going to be available for people. It already is available if people want to go back through and review that or listen to those meetings also.
All right. So as chair, will you be directing the council to vote on this by the end of the year?
I believe that that we would like to have some sort of decision by the end of the year. This is still a project that although we've been processing as a county this application since 2020, we have not yet made any decision on this project, whether yes or no. And so it is time for us to make a decision on this project.
All right. Now, during the last round of negotiations, the council made some counter proposals. Are we doing that now? Are we done?
As far as what piece, Leslie?
Just in terms of the project that's being proposed. I mean, this is it. No other opportunity for negotiation.
There absolutely is additional opportunity for negotiation. So we've gotten it to a place, again, we had a subcommittee that we announced publicly was going to be meeting just in terms of the public-private partnership, they did not look at any of the housing components, the market rate or the affordable on the rest of the project. But looking at what is the feasibility, if we decided to partner with Dakota Pacific on creating a public-private partnership, what might that look like in terms of what could be built? What sort of public benefits could we glean from that? And also the financial feasibility of that component of the project. So from the public discussions that we have had to this point, it sounds like many council members feel that there are some benefits to the public within this project, and that's what we want to understand from the public. Are these benefits that they deem to be beneficial to them and their lives as well?
All right. The public hearing on the 7th at New Park Hotel, 6 p.m., is that the time?
I believe it starts at 5:30.
Okay, moving on to the budget. During the weekly budget discussion, you heard from the sheriff's office about ways they have been more efficient and have made do with their existing budget. How do you decide which departments you hear from during council meetings, or does every department get to make requests in person?
So my understanding this year is that those departments that are presenting to us are departments that have additions to the budget that are being recommended by the budget committee. And I believe that our county manager's intention with that was to help us understand, as we're reviewing the budget, he wants us to understand what the efficiencies have been within these departments. How have they gone through within this peak performance program, which county management has instituted over the course of this last year, to look at where are the areas that we can become more efficient? Where are the areas that maybe there we can save money or time, or are there positions that could be combined into one? Do we need additional positions in order to be able to get the things done that need to be done? And so within this, the departments that are being recommended to have additional staff will be presenting both on what their request is as far as why they need that addition, what benefit does that have to the county and to their department, as well as how they've really tighten their belts to try to increase the efficiency in other areas within their departments. So we did hear from the sheriff's office yesterday, and we'll be hearing from other departments in the near future. We also heard from the county attorney's office and others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you'll be hearing from the health department and government services in upcoming meetings. Now, the sheriff's office compiled with state school resource officer mandates by combining courtroom and jail divisions to free up staff. So is this a good use of taxpayer money, or are we stretching them too thin?
I think that when it comes to our sheriff's department, they do a lot with few people in comparison to other jurisdictions. Ideally, they would have additional staff currently, which is something that I think over the course of the next few years, the county is likely to look at. With where they're at right now, they combined the position, as you stated, for the courts and the jail, the lieutenant. They used to have two lieutenants for each of those areas. Now there is one lieutenant, which they have done previously in the past. That was one position that oversaw both of those divisions. That will now occur again with Lieutenant Evans heading both of those departments, which he has sergeants and obviously many deputies on both sides that will be doing that work. And then that freed up an additional lieutenant without creating a new position that would be costly to be able to oversee the school resource officer program, which, as you stated, was a mandate by the state during this last legislative session.
So the sheriff's office reporting they had five times more calls in 2023 than it did in 2022. You're on the Criminal Justice Coordinating Committee. I mean, what needs do you see that need to be addressed this budget season?
Within law enforcement specifically?
Mm-hmm.
I think within law enforcement, they absolutely would benefit from additional patrol deputies that would be on the roads during just the course of normal operating hours, which is 24 hours. And in particular, within the evening shifts, Sheriff Smith and Chief Deputy Bates indicated that we have the same levels of service currently within our sheriff's department as far as deputies on the road that are patrolling as we did in 2002, although our population has gone up in addition to just the complexity of what they're dealing with on all sides, including mental health, different types of crime, more visitors, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that they would benefit from additional patrol officers. Again, that's not what's being requested this year, but I would anticipate over the course of the next few years that that's something that's going to continue to rise to the top for the sheriff's office budget process.
Yeah, and an item that keeps coming up is that shooting in Browns Canyon, where the sheriff says that has cost the county a lot in overtime and that he may need more resources. So that's where you're thinking about the need for the nighttime patrolling.
Absolutely. And I think any time that there's a major incident, whether it's that shooting or, if there's any sort of violent crime situation, investigation, those are all very costly and very both time intensive, but also human resource intensive in order to properly investigate that, as well as ensure that the safety of all parties involved, including the officers. So yes, absolutely, the additional manpower would be beneficial to that process in all sides.
Okay. Also, the sheriff's office asking for two new deputies, one specifically for the 910 cattle ranch. Why do we need a deputy there? I mean, couldn't you just hire a couple of cowboys who are familiar with the area?
So my understanding with this is that in our public lands department, they wanted to hire somebody that would essentially be patrolling that area, ensuring that we are adequately dealing with poachers, that people are safe, especially in the short term while we're still determining how to manage that land and program that land. We want to make sure that we're being appropriate stewards and into the future. The conversation, as I understand it, with county management was that it would be easiest to put that position within the sheriff's office because they already understand how to do that. Having a sheriff's deputy that is patrolling that, they would be able to take action on a trespasser or a poacher immediately versus just having to report it, which would be what an unsworn person would have to do. They wouldn't have authority to take action in that moment if someone was breaking the law or doing something harmful on our property.
Okay. Moving on to the special exception discussion. The planning department led this discussion. The council rarely grants special exceptions to applicants. Is it something that the council is now considering changing?
No, it's not something that the council was considering changing. We had not looked at the special exception language and if we felt that it was still working adequately since I believe 2009 when it was created. And so we've had several special exceptions recently that have been that have sparked some additional council conversation. And so I asked staff to bring this forward so we could have a full conversation regarding, is this working the way that we believe it should be working? Are there any changes that we want to see? And the conclusion of that was, you know, we think that this is working well. The areas that we're maybe seeing that we might want to change would be better addressed within the code itself. And as staff are working on the general plan rewrite, in addition to how they're handling applications with, you know, people that are wanting, you know, a special exception or something that's outside of the code, the staff consistently encourage them that if that's something that they want, then they should likely apply for a code amendment with their application because of how special exceptions are handled, which is that they are rarely granted. And that is the intention of this council, that the special exception remain for something that is very unique, that it's not, you know, just a way to circumvent the code because somebody doesn't like the code as it's written.
Right. So Planning Director Peter Barnes said that he wants to avoid people using these exceptions as the alternative application process. So is that something that the Planning Department's seen a lot of?
So my understanding, and they are the experts on this, I am not as privy to their day-to-day as they would be able to tell you. However, that this does come up with people wanting to circumvent the code, and that planning, most of those do not come to council because planning deals with that in-house, explaining that's not the process. Here are your options. And really working with individuals to try to help them to figure out how to do what they want to do within the constraints of the code. And so many of those do not come to council, but from what the planning director said yesterday, it sounds like it's not uncommon for them to have somebody come before them that has a plan that's not compliant with the code, that they want to seek circumvent the code and just do something different and trying to seek some sort of process outside of the code currently.
Okay. Finally, just wanted to ask, it sounds like the mental health contract nearly at the finish line, working it out with the University of Utah. Can you give us the status update there?
Yeah, so I mean, the status update, we've been working on the behavioral health contract for, gosh, probably a year, year and a half. We're getting to a place where all parties are able to really dig in on the contract as well as ensure compliance with some of the state code that we have to abide by in order to maintain our funding. And so we have had a few hiccups in the last couple of weeks. I believe all of those have been fixed at this point. And so we are just finalizing those contracts. And as I spoke to our behavioral health manager, Aaron Newman, yesterday, he said that this would be before us soon. So I'd anticipate in the next, you know, month, month and a half.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Just really wanted to encourage members of the public to attend the public hearing for the Dakota Pacific Project on Thursday, November 7th at 5:30 at the New Park Hotel. And also wanted to thank our staff for all of their hard work. I know budget season is a really intense time for our staff. They have to do their normal job in addition to all sorts of additional presentations and preparations. It's been a lot of work and they've done a great job.
All right, Melina, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Melina Stevens is the chair of the Summit County Council. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Joining me now in the studio with an update from the Park City Senior Center, I have President Liz Novak along with board member Francine McNally. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So, Liz, first off, I noticed that after years, it looks like the price of lunch is going up $1. Still,
yes,
a pretty good deal, though.
Still a great deal. Summit County provides our lunches on Monday and Thursday. And unfortunately, due to rising costs for food and transportation and personnel, the lunches are now $4.
All right. And I heard that that's like far less than what it really actually costs. So it's definitely subsidized.
It's subsidized with MAG is partly Mountainlands Aging
Association.
They provide part of the lunch costs. So between the money the seniors pay and MAG, it's still not probably covering lunch.
Okay. Now, this is actually only a suggested donation, or does everybody pay up?
Pretty much everybody pays up, but no one is turned away if they do not pay for their lunch.
All right. And if you sign up for lunch and don't show up, then are you docked?
We're forgiving.
Well, there's leftovers. We'll just say that. But the leftovers don't go to waste. We do have seniors who bring in their Tupperware. It's their meal not only at lunch, but it's probably their meal at dinner. So if we have any leftovers or they have leftovers on their own plate, they're taking it home.
All right. You also have some new rules as to, and these were implemented a while ago, I think, as to when people must let the county know that they're coming for lunch.
Yes. 5 o'clock the night before is what we prefer. We understand people do get busy. Life can get complicated sometimes. So if someone calls in that morning or they show up, again, we do not turn them away.
Okay, this is the time of year that the Senior Center provides annual reports to the city and county. What do these reports say?
Well, it's basically a state of the Park City Senior Center report. We are governed by a memorandum of understanding with the city and the county to provide those annual reports. We are, though, pleased to be able to share the good news about what's happening at the center in Park City. But also we take advantage of the time by sharing with both the Park City Council and Summit County Council our aspirations for Park City Senior Center. We are growing. Our programs, as you're aware, Leslie, are expanding exponentially, so to keep up with the membership. So we think it's really imperative that we share with both councils our aspirations to deal with the growth.
Okay, so give us some of those data points then. I mean, how fast or how big are you growing?
We are by leaps and bounds. As of September 9th, our membership at Park City Senior Center was 605 members, up from in 2022, we had 384. So obviously there's quite a bit of growth. In terms of programs, again, this is just as of September. We have 88 programs that we are offering our seniors, up from 30 programs in 2022.
So when you say programs, are those individual day programs? Or
yeah, they're like, they're card games, and we have exercise, Tai Chi. They go on trips to museums and planetariums, so all of that is an activity. And what we've seen is we hired a activities director. And as a result of that, that was through a grant from the Park City Special Services, we see everything growing because we have someone now whose job is to make sure we have activities and fun things for our members. And as our membership's grown, you can see our activities are growing. And that has a lot, that's almost 100% because we have a person doing it now.
Okay. So, I mean, when we talk about Tai Chi, that's considered as one program, not 52 weeks of Tai Chi.
No. Yeah. Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
Correct.
Oh, okay. Significant. In terms of just looking in how much room you have at the center to host these programs, so what does that mean? That people can't come or?
People are coming. I think I'm taking a breath because it is cheek to jowl at the center. We have 3,200 square feet of space. Some of that, though, is made up by the kitchen and some storage areas. So we basically have a dining room and an adjacent room where we sponsor the activities. The dining room is basically used for meals. So it's tight.
And right now we have probably an average of 60 coming for meals, mm-hmm. and that is maxed out. We really have no other room for tables. And the other thing is we have, in our other room, we have so much going on. We had the Summit County Health there mm-hmm. to give COVID and flu vaccinations. We were in a small corner on a card table, 15 feet from people playing Mexican Train and the staff trying to get all the personal information. It really, unless you come and see the amount of space we have and what we're doing in it, it's just pretty mind-boggling, actually.
Okay, well, before I talk about the news center, let's talk a little bit about just the, because we know it's coming, it's called the senior tsunami. So what are those figures showing you?
Well, currently, we break it out in two areas, Leslie. When you look at just Park City itself, Park City 84060, we're looking at 39% of the total population are seniors. And what we're talking about are those seniors 50. They're included in the pipeline up through 80. 74% of Park City seniors are between the ages of 50 and 69. So there is definitely growth. When you compare us as a county, the county senior population is 10% larger than the state of Utah. So we're growing. As you said, it is a tsunami. Two-thirds of Summit County residents live in 84060 and 84098. And 84098 is basically the Snyderville Basin. That population of the seniors make up 70% of the seniors who participate in the Park City Senior Center. So it's the numbers are pretty telling in regards to how the population is growing and the need to address senior issues in our community.
So when you have those folks, the majority of them coming from out of Park City limits, how do they get there? Because there's not much parking.
Well, it's carpooling. We do have folks who live in Old Town who will walk to the senior center if the weather is decent. But the folks who live out in 098 area that want to come into their closest senior center, which is Park City, has to navigate two bus systems. So they come in by the county system, High Valley, and then they leave by the Park City Mobility bus system. So what we're finding is our seniors are having a difficult time navigating between two bus systems, following their schedules, figuring out the timing, making sure that they're picked up, addressing ADA issues for our seniors. So that's part of the challenge. But even with all of that, we still, as Francie indicated, we still have at least 60 folks coming to the center on Monday and Thursday for lunch, not to mention folks coming in Tuesday and Wednesday for other activities.
Hmm. So is there a way to simplify the transit issue?
Well,
we have asked that several times, and at this point the answer is probably no, but we continue to work on it because it is a lot to navigate for people. They have to make reservations, and so it really is. But I think the county and city continue to, you know, try to make this so it's a little more seamless.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the new senior center. I mean, do we have final plans at this point?
No. Go ahead, Francie.
No, we do not have final plans. We're waiting for the city to continue. The architect is working on design. And once, you know, the design is done, they are able to come up with more of a price, what the cost of it is going to be. And those two things have to be determined. And we will go back with the city as soon as they get some design and we can begin to look at it. But at this point, we're just continuing to work on it. And I think, you know, we're making steps. Not as fast as we want, of course, but it's going fine. We're going forward.
Well, I think your hope is to get to break ground next year. Is that realistic?
That's correct. I don't know.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, you know, at this point, we're meeting and trying to keep the ball going, and the city and county both are very, you know, they were wanting us to continue with the, you know, keeping this on track and having something happen.
Yeah, so what about a temporary center? Because the idea is that gets basically demolished and then an entire new center with some affordable housing gets built.
Correct. We would have to be housed somewhere else. Site, facility to be determined at this particular point in time. I know that the committee that Francie chairs is looking at working with the realtor and the city with regards to what that would look like. But again, there is nothing definitive at this particular point in time.
And then what about, what's the latest with getting senior housing built? We heard some discussion at the Summit County Council meeting yesterday about, you know, does it go Dakota Pacific? Does it go out into the Gilmore property? But I think you guys have toured the Gilmore?
Yes, there has been leadership representing the Park City seniors working with Summit County Council members Armstrong and Robinson. And there was a on-site visit, if you will, last week. But again, those conversations are being held pretty close to the vest. I think there's an interest on the part of the county to provide a continuing care retirement community that would address all stages of aging in place. But again, nothing definitive at this particular point in time, other than conversations, and there is an interest.
Mm-hmm. And the county, just as a clarification, these two projects, the new senior center mm-hmm. and senior housing on the property that we currently have on Woodside, is different than the CCRC that the county is looking at. Those are both very separate and will have, you know, very different ways that we'll try to approach how those happen.
But sure. And as we saw with the closing, though, of Elk Meadows in Oakley, I mean, we know that this is a kind of a losing proposition. So who's going to, how do you even get interest for something like this?
Interest. Well, keep banging the drum. I think it's making sure that the community is aware of the needs of the senior population. And, you know, there's a saying that it's cool to age because everybody's doing it. And I think it's really imperative that no matter where you are in the stage of life, people need to get behind making sure that we're taking care of one of our most vulnerable populations. And I think it's an indication about how compassionate, how kind, how caring a community is by taking care of vulnerable populations such as seniors. So I think, again, Leslie, to answer your question, I think it's just constantly making sure that we're getting the word out. But I don't think it's just up to seniors. I just think it's a community embracing the notion we need to take care of each other.
Okay.
And another thing, if we had a facility of our own, a CCRC with different stages of living, people wouldn't have to go to Salt Lake City and Heber and all outlying areas. So that might make an Elk Meadows work if it was a continuing care where we could have all stages of care. Maybe there would be a lot more people. In fact, I know there would be a lot more people.
Okay, we'll have to bring you back next quarter and find out where you're moving. Okay, thanks so much.
Thank you, Leslie. Thank you for the opportunity.
Liz Novak, president of Park City Senior Incorporated, and board member Francine McNally. Well, as KPCW reported last week in a split vote, the Park City Planning Commission voted down the plans for the DoubleTree Yarrow application, which could signal the end of these redevelopment plans. On the phone to tell us more is one of the partners in the development, Peter Tamai, who tells me that he is not speaking on behalf of the owners, but rather as a resident of Park City. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
Doing well, thanks. So why does that clarification need to be made?
You know, given the reception at the Planning Commission the other night, Leslie, and kind of a really definitive direction that nothing over 35 feet or three stories was going to be, you know, approved at that location, you know, ownership has to kind of go back to the drawing board. And at this point, you know, all our focus, we have a successfully operating hotel. We have a great team, and we have to get back to focusing on business and operating the RO to be, you know, the lodging property that it has been for 47 years.
Yeah, I guess I have the clarification I was asking is why aren't you speaking on behalf of the business as opposed to you?
Right, and it's a continuing business. And so, they were incredibly committed to, you know, what I viewed as a tremendously accretive redevelopment of that site. And I think, you know, there was really broad community support for the redevelopment by virtue of the really compelling slate of community benefits that were to be offered there. I mean, this is the ultimate example of unlocking public benefit through private investment. And that was, you know, it's kind of a signature piece without the city having to form a public-private partnership or put any city investment into a project. You know, they were getting, you know, 80,000 square feet of publicly accessible open space, you know, 1,700, almost a third of a mile of public trails and kind of new connectivity that doesn't exist today, and facilities and infrastructure for, you know, hopefully a future pedestrian crossing at Kearns Boulevard. You know, obviously updated, you know, aesthetics and improvement of what's currently failing public infrastructure. The city's own sidewalks around Park and Kearns have been a problem that's been identified in the you know, walk committee's work for almost, you know, well, since the beginning of talk. You know, the Dan Sajans corridor is something that's been talked about for decades, and trying to improve that pedestrian experience and the safety. And now with the inclusion of e-biking and more alternative transit solutions, it just has become more critical to try to deliver those types of benefits to the community.
All right.
Regrettably, I don't see any other path to those. The city's been, you know, identified that area as a need for upgrades and has budget in place to do it. But, and this project would have allowed the city to save their own budget and allow the, you know, private developers to deliver public benefit. So it's a really massive loss to the community from my perspective.
So the bones of the development is, we got how many acres there at the corner of Kearns and Park?
Correct. You know, it's
how
it's,
many acres is what is, I asked. But, yeah.
Oh, how many acres? It's 4.46 acres. So okay. It's a large site.
And the current zoning only allows 35 feet. So why is 45 feet needed? I mean, how many more units does Singerman Real Estate need to make this pencil out?
Well, you know, the issue, and it's, you know, the city's, the issue, Leslie, is not about how many more units. It's about kind of the collection of uses. And I think there was broad community aspirations and kind of unanimity about the aspirations for Bonanza Park, a future Bonanza Park that was, you know, kind of community focused and a place for locals. And there were many analogs that were cited, like, you know, locally the best analog is probably certain areas of Sugar House, where you have kind of this complete community. And a lot of that's all accomplished through mixed use. And, you know, mixed use, you know, essentially requires a commercial main level. So you have, you know, kind of the first story of buildings predominated by, you know, lobbies and other commercial spaces, hopefully restaurants, cafes, and kind of, you know, those types of public amenities. So then, you know, in a three-story building, you only have two stories of units. And when you have the, you know, tremendous expense associated with putting all of your parking underground, you try to free up the ground plane, which today is covered by asphalt. You know, there's currently 180 plus or minus cars of parking or surrounding Yarrow. You know, it's just a sea of asphalt. We've all been there, I'm sure, and aware of the asphalt-dominated landscape of that corner. And this project proposed to take virtually all of that area and turn it into a really nice kind of landscape green belt, with a brand new wide multi-use path, you know, transitioning through there, and around the entire site that would provide an easy path,
okay,
you know, around and through. So the reason you need the height is, you know, in order to clear the ground plane for public benefit, the only way to do those is those uses have to go somewhere, and you stack them on top. And in fact, it's kind of the classic formula of building up instead of out, because, you know, that's how you can, right? If you look at Bonanza Park today, it's predominated by asphalt and then cinder block or metal buildings.
Okay, I want to move on here, though. Just down the block from you, the city is building Engine House for affordable housing. How tall is that project?
Correct. That project at its highest is about 50 feet.
All right, so how did they get that height exception passed?
That project was done under the AMPD code, which is the Affordable Master Plan Development Code, that has a specific code for projects that are greater than 50% affordable housing, that allows them to go to, not only allows them to go to four stories as of right, but then also allows them to have much smaller setbacks. So, you know, that project has a 10-foot side yard setback on, it's a much smaller site. And it, you know, it has, there's, they were proposing 124 units there. So that building is four stories, you know, a roof height of 45 feet and, you know, total height of a, you know, little around 50 feet. You know, I think when you see it done, and it's finely landscaped and all of that, it's, you know, it's not blocking anybody's views. And it will provide a lot of necessary housing.
So the city's also in the process of finding a private developer to work on a similar sized site, the 5-acre parcel formerly known as the Art and Culture District there, just around the corner from you. My understanding is that there will be a new land code there. They don't have all of that affordable housing to get that AMPD exception. So why can't Singerman have the same benefit as perhaps Bonanza Park? Do you just need to wait another year or so?
You know, that's a great question, Leslie, and I wish I knew the answer to it. But, you know, the city's existing code, the MPD code, contemplates height exceptions. And the height exceptions are in the code to allow projects to be made better. And there's a distinct body of code around the height exceptions. And the design ultimately was to be able to free up the ground plane. Again, build up, not out, so that you can open ground level air spaces to be, you know, some sort of public amenity or community benefit. So the existing code is whether the commission can find a path. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens in the city's 5 acres.
All right. I guess, would your project have qualified under that Bonanza code that they're working on now?
The Bonanza code's not complete yet. Mm-hmm. And some aspects of the code, I think, are going to be very challenging to be able to deliver affordable housing under the proposed code, because some of the building details that are being suggested drive the construction costs to a point where delivering deeply affordable housing is going to be very under that code.
And we heard from the Singerman's attorney that one of the developers interested in that 5-acre project actually pulled out of the RFP shortlist just because of what they saw happen here at the Yarrow. So maybe they're not getting as much benefit.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. As I said, I don't see a path. When you apply, you know, some of the strictest interpretations, actually, I believe misinterpretation of the frontage protection zone, which that site is also subject to, look at the shape of the site. I think the city's aspirations for the financial reality for that site. So it'll be interesting to see what the city receives in terms of RFP responses.
Okay, I only have another minute or so here. So what's the plan then for the DoubleTree going forward? Do you have to sign a new contract with a different hotel chain?
Yeah, you know, the window of opportunity that we were presented with, which is why we're here today, or they were here today, was the anniversary of the management agreement. Franchise agreement with Hilton. So they have to decide, you know, how to go forward, whether as a franchise property or potentially back to an independent property like the Yarrow, and focus. Hey, we have a great team. Tony and his team there are unbelievable. They consistently get great guest service record, you know, scores, and focus on being a hotel and serving the guests of Park City.
All right. So what does the name revert back to then?
Probably the Yarrow. Hard to say.
Yeah.
You know, we've all known it as the Yarrow forever. And it was the DoubleTree, you know, it's the DoubleTree by Hilton Park City. The Yarrow is its official name today. But if they don't elect to renew with Hilton, then it'll just go back to the RO in all probability.
All right. So do you guys what then, sell it, or are you going to sit this out and wait another year and see what happens with Bonanza?
You know, I have no idea. You know, Singerman's owned the property for what, over 11 years. They were deeply committed to the community, by virtue of the huge investment that was put in the hotel 10 years ago to make it meet Hilton brand standard. And which is why personally, I'm kind of heartbroken by the fact that we don't see a path forward for that project under the current direction from planning.
Okay, I need to leave it there, Peter. Thanks for much of your time.
Hey, thanks so much, Leslie. I'm sorry I'm not there with you. Have a great one.
That's Peter Tamai. You've been listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW Park City.